Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Monster X Radio. It's January 26, 2014. I'm your host, Johnny Bigfoot, and with me tonight is my co-host, Shane Corson.
Hey,
how's it
Johnny,
going
how
there,
you doing
Shane?
Tonight, man? You know, it's going great, man. Just looking forward to another great show here on Monster X Radio.
Nice. How's the weather over there?
Beautiful. Beautiful and cold. You know, it's probably mid-40s right now, but it's sun's out, expecting rain next week, and I think we're finally, we've been in a bit of a drought as far as the Pacific Northwest is concerned. This time of year, we usually get a lot of rain and snow, but I've been fortunate. That hasn't been a lot, so I've been able to make it out to the field even this past weekend, so it's been pleasurable.
Nice. Yeah, we can't say the same here.
Minnesota cold.
Yeah, they're closing schools tomorrow and Tuesday because the weather is going to be so cold here. Right now it's blowing snow and the temperatures are dropping.
Ouch. I'm not jealous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an extremely cold winter here.
Yeah, it's been mild here, so, you know, it's been real mild. So, like I said, it's working out to my benefit getting out in the field, but it's going to take a change for the worse here next week.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I guess without further ado, we'll introduce our guest tonight. Our guest is from Ohio. He's a cryptid researcher. He was originally a member of the Cincinnati UFO Research Group, ASK, but I guess he realized that his interests were more in the field of cryptozoology. He's been studying the Bigfoot phenomenon since 1991. He's authored several books, which I'm looking forward to reading myself. He's the co-founder of the Ohio Center for Bigfoot Studies and Cryptid Seekers. He's been on several television programs, and you can often find him giving presentations at cryptid paranormal conventions. Welcome to the show, Jody Cook.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome, buddy. Good to have you.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
Nice.
Good to be here.
How's the Jody? Well, how's the weather in your area
cold.
There?
It's cold.
Cold. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cold. We just got hit with a snowstorm yesterday, and the temperatures are going to be dropping single digits next couple of days and stuff. And so, this global warming, is kicking in hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure hurts.
yeah. It's really, yeah. But no, No, I'm just saying it's just, we kind of need it. So, I'm kind of close to, the river, and it just kind of shoots a really cold, breeze up from the river and stuff. So,
do you make it out in weather like that, or you just avoid it?
No, I do. I don't like to do a whole lot out. My biggest thing is, and I talk about it, when I do conventions and things, that safety is like the first thing. Safety should always go above research, at all times. And there are certain environments like this when it's extremely cold, do your limited research, or just go out to an area you can get out and get back to pretty quickly, and or at least have somebody with you and stuff. That's the thing, and it's just the only bad thing about wintertime is just when you're dealing with tracks, even though it is cold, the tracks still melt, and they do form different shapes and things like that. That's like I said, that's the only thing. I mean, I'll go out in weather like this if I get a really good report or a really good sighting that has happened within a few hours or maybe a day or two, then I'll go out. But normally I just, I don't. Now there have been times that I have done it, but it's just, I don't like,
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, I love the cold. I'd rather do it over the heat, but like I said, it's just, it's just the environment. Like I said, you burn a lot more energy in the snow, and it's a lot more.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, you're putting yourself more in danger in the winter than you are in the summer when you're out in the field.
Yeah.
That's a good point. You do burn more energy.
Yeah.
We'd go ice fishing, and you'd come home, and you'd just be spent. And you'd be like, I didn't do anything, but, sit over the hole and pull in a few fish. But
when you're out in cold weather, you start to peel your clothing, and that's when it starts to get dangerous, and things. And a lot of people, I sit there and tell them, if you're going out, it doesn't matter if it's winter or if it's summer, if you're going out into the field, always bring some type of first aid kit, some type of survival kit, food and water for 3 days. Even though if you're going to be out there for a few hours, or a day, stuff happens. You always got to be prepared. Safety has to go, before research, and it may be a lot of stuff that you're dragging with you, but you can minimize this stuff, to a lot of dry food, and things like that. But it's just you gotta put safety way above your research. And like I said, it's just a lot of people, they're very careless and they go out by themselves. They normally don't tell people where they're going when they do their research because they want to keep their areas hush hush. And then if they get hurt or something, they're out there and no one's going to be able to find them. It's like there was one researcher. I can't remember the guy's name, out in California, and he constantly went out into the woods, constantly, and for a month, The guy was missing. He was went out, had a heart attack. You know, perfect shape.
Oh,
you know, very athletic, and died in the middle of the night in his tent. And they found him, you know, after a month looking for him, they found his tent, and he was there in his sleeping bag. And, you know, the guy was an avid, you know, Bigfoot researcher. And, I mean, things happen, you know, but it goes to that case. You know, he didn't tell nobody. He just told his wife and daughter, hey, I'll, you know, it's Friday. I'll see you on Sunday. And that was it.
Yeah.
And, you know, a month later, you know, the poor guy died of a heart, you know, laying up in the mountains there, you know.
That's a, especially in this kind of weather that we're having right now. It's a, you need to be extra precautious.
It could kill you. It could kill you quick, you know.
Right, you get hurt in weather like you guys are having, and you're going solo, you're in trouble, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's the thing I always tell you. I mean, you should never go out to the field by yourself, regardless. I mean, you know, because people out there understand that, you know, there's predators you have to worry about. There's other things. I mean, the environment can kill you. I mean, literally. I mean, you know, and you gotta. You know, like, you know, I know I'm like a broken record. Safety has to come before research, you know, when you get out into the field. And it's always good to have somebody with you, you know, always tell somebody, you know, where you're going to be, maybe leave a map or, you know, directions to an area where you're going to be out and research. So if something does happen, you know, God forbid, you know, they're able to find you or able to locate you, you know.
Yeah.
And things, put it in your wife's GPS or, you know, on your phone or, you know, something like that, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, like I said, I know, you know, there are people that go out in this weather, you know, and it's just, man, it's by themselves, and it's crazy, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't care how much military training you have. I mean, you know, that's something, you know. Weather doesn't discriminate, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, I used to do a lot of solo trips, and I finally had through trial and error, and have had enough people come to me and say, hey, you know, man, you probably shouldn't be doing this, and, you know, following the news of all these, you know, missed people, hurt people, whatnot. There's so many elements to what can happen out there. You know, I've come to my senses, and I no longer go out by myself. You know, I usually have at least one other person with me. You know, and like I said, we're having decent weather here, but, you know, things happen. Some of the terrain we travel on is very difficult. And
I've been chased up a tree by boars, you know, and I mean they'll stay right on that tree till you come down, you know, for hours. I'm not kidding, you know. You know, and things, and you know, they're vicious little critters, man. And you know, I came up on a bear before, you know. Luckily he ran, you know. But if it was a mother with cubs, you know, it would have been a different situation, you know. Just think about, you know, the different type of snakes. I mean, you know, Ohio, you know, we got copperheads, you know, we got the brown Lecluse spider, you know, which is a pretty nasty spider, you know, there's just enough. You walk and, you know, hit a, you know, just step into a, you know, rabbit hole or something like that, and you twist your ankle, man, and you'll be down. You know, deers, hell, I mean, they'll attack you, and they're nasty, you know, mean little critters.
Yeah, there's been a few videos posted online lately of deer attacking people. I find funny, but it actually is kind of serious.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and, you know, and you know, a lot of states have big cats, and a lot of states, you know, the wildlife will sit there and deny that they're there, you know.
Right.
Ohio's one of them. You know, they've been.
Yeah, same here.
You know, Wisconsin, you know, Minnesota. You know, they all got big cat sightings and stuff there. You know, and things, and you know, they're the wildlife said, oh, they're not there, not well until it kills someone. You know, and it's going to be a different story, and that's what's going to happen. You know,
right
and stuff. I mean, you know, they we had an elk. that got hit on a major highway here in Ohio, you know, and, you know, Ohio doesn't have elk. I mean, you know.
No, I was going to say.
You know, but, I mean, it could have been from a preserve. You know, I mean, there is preserves. But, you know, but there again, you know, Ohio is well known for legal and illegal animal trade. You know, we've got a lot of it, you know, a lot of people. You know, we had a gorilla just die, you know, at the Cincinnati Zoo about 2-3 years ago, named Colossal, and he'd never seen another gorilla until he came to the Cincinnati Zoo because he was owned by two people that, you know, that kept him. He grew up knowing humans, never seen another gorilla in his life, you know, until he came to the zoo here, you know, and it's like I found a baboon skull, you know, you know, a few years ago, and obviously it was someone's pet, you know, you know, but there again, you know, there is two research centers that do research on primates in Ohio, you know, and one of them did catch on fire and some did get out, but it's very doubtful that they would have survived, you know, the winters. You know, I don't think that they could have adapted throughout the years, you know, to our harsh winters and stuff. I mean, our winters are not quite like Minnesota and you know, Wisconsin, but they're just as cold, you know, but,
yeah.
But, you know, but like I said, we have a lot of, you know, exotic animal trade here going on here, and, you know, people love their monkeys and stuff, and, you know, like I said, I think this was someone's pet that just got too big, and either they let it go, it got loose, or they took it out and shot it, you know, because these are vicious animals, man, and, you know, and people aren't used to seeing these things, and if they see it, you know, they don't know what it is. You know, they describe it as something, you know, monstrous. It's like, you know, I got a report of a woman, you know, her dogs were barking, and she goes out and sees what it is, and this is in Adams County where they have a lot of exotic animal trade, and she's looking out, and she has like three ponds, kind of like back to back a little bit, you know, from her house. And at the second pond, she sees this thing, big hairy ape, but it's walking on knuckles, you know, and she describes it as a chimpanzee. And that's how she describes this thing. And the dogs are going ballistic, and it's just the whole time, you know, just ignoring them. But it goes up to the pond, drinks some water out of the pond, you know, sits there for a while, and it goes back into the wood line, but it's walking on all fours, you know, and things. So, and that's the way she described it. And, you know, I went from what she saw, she goes, to me, it was a chimpanzee. You know, that's what it looked like. That's the way it was walking. Well, it probably was. You know, I doubt if it was a Bigfoot. I mean, they've had sightings of Bigfoot, you know, where some have got on all four and, you know, then got up on two legs and things. But you know, most likely this could have been someone's pet that could have got out. They maybe let it out for a little bit, you know, or something. So, I mean, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, if you're finding, what did you find, a baboon skull? I mean, that had to have been pretty cool.
Yeah,
across that.
We got this area. It's called Buzzard's Roost Rock. And it's this rock that's kind of neat. It's kind of like Devil's Mountain from what's that one movie called? Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like that. We have one of those.
Yeah,
Devil's Mountain. Yeah, Devil's Mountain. But it's kind of smaller, okay? But this thing's kind of neat. And the Native Americans that's where they would go, and they would sit up there, and they would be able to see the whole valley. And it's really, what's kind of odd about this thing is that, you know, it shouldn't be there, you know, because Ohio, is a lot of flat land, because it's kind of like where the glaciers more or less stopped, you know. But we have like hills and valleys, okay, is how it was kind of like carved in certain, you know, the further south you go, because that's how the, when, like, you know, when the, you know, like I said, when the glacier stopped. But this rock shouldn't, this rock thing should not be there, because you know, the glaciers basically should have tore it down, you know. So it's kind of a mystical thing with the Native Americans, you know, in Ohio with the Shawnee and the Cherokees. So, but anyhow, we have, they call it Buzzard's Roost Rock because the buzzards, that's where all the buzzards hang up there. And these are pretty big buzzards. I mean, these are huge. So a lot of people kind of climb up there, but they don't do it anymore because the buzzards kind of push you off, because, you know, they just, they're getting bigger and they're getting meaner and things like that. But I went up there and got on top, and you got to, like, climb up through this crevice and stuff to get up there. And so I climbed up the crevice up there, and it was just going through some of the bones that's up there. And I saw it. It was laying upside down, and I noticed the teeth first. And I was thinking, wow, man, this is, you know, this is a dog's head, I mean, or something, you know. And I said, I mean, geez, the, you know, the canines on this thing was, like, freaking huge. And I'm like, what is this thing? And, you know, and I still didn't know it until I was, you know, because it was eaten on. You can see where the skull was, I mean, that the brow was eaten off, you know, chewed off, you know. I mean, whatever had it before, I guess the buzzards did, was eating on it. And you can see bite marks, you know, and stuff on it. I, you know, and I kind of figured out, I said, man, this kind of looks like a primate skull, a monkey skull or something like that. And, but I couldn't find any other bones, you know, around there, that were probably, you know, the baboon bones and stuff like that. Cause it, you know, there was nothing else up there that was that big, you know, other than how that skull got up there was beyond me, unless somebody took it up there and you know, threw it up there or left it up there. Or, but, you know, these buzzards are big enough to pick it up and take it up there, you know. But I just thought it was neat, so I kept it. And but I knew, you know, with all this stuff going on, it was most likely somebody's pet. But the whole point when we did the Monster Quest show, and Monster Quest says, you know, and I talked to him about it, and he said, you know, well, that's neat. Let's show the skull. And I said, okay, that's fine, but you're going to have to explain, you know, why the skull was there and how the skull was found. And of course, they did, which kind of, I was upset about that. And that's why, right, I wrote the book, you know, Legend of the Grass Man, and where I actually put it in there, you know, that it, you know, with Ohio being a lot of exotic animal trade and things like that, so people knew that, you know, this was most likely somebody's pet, and that, you know, baboons are not from Ohio, you know, and things. So yeah, so it's, you know, it was kind of a weird situation doing that, you know. But you know, like I said, you know, when especially with the dogmen sightings and stuff that we have here, you know, if people see these things, you know, these are pretty big animals, you know. It looks like they look like werewolves, you know, a little bit, you know, and things. But, you know, when most people don't know the animals that's around, they see something like that, you know, with these long fangs and stuff, they get terrified, and, you know, to them it's a monster.
Right. And baboons are known for eating meat.
Oh, they'll eat meat. They'll definitely eat meat.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, they're definitely carnivores. You know,
but being an exotic pet, you know, it's out of its element, especially in an area like that. It would probably succumb to the elements and starvation rather quickly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that
make
too.
A winner.
Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, I mean, there's enough stuff for it to eat. It's, the fact of it is just getting it and catching it is one thing. And two, like I said, the winter will kill it a lot quicker. You know, and stuff. I mean, I, you know, like I said, the environment would kill it off before, I think, you know, Because, you know, I talked to a deputy sheriff in another county that saw one cross the road, you know, and he reported it, put it in there, and, you know, that he said it, you know, he was right on it, and he said it was a baboon, you know.
Wow.
And it, because he said it stopped in the road. And this was on in another county on a different part of the state, you know. And, yeah, and he said it was definitely a baboon. So, but like I said, you know, they are research centers, you know, that do primate research. And I know one of them did catch on fire. A lot of them did get out, you know. So the possibility, you know, maybe they could survive the winter. I don't know. But, you know, but most likely, you know, they're pets, you know.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. You know, and that, you know, a lot of those, a lot of encounters or stories probably come from scenarios like that, because especially with exotic pets, you know, especially if it's illegal, a lot of people aren't going to report something getting loose or, you know, in fear of getting in trouble.
No, I mean, and they're not. And see, like, well, what's going on here in Ohio now, and it's going on in, I found out, like, Michigan, and it's going on in West Virginia, is that the Canadian red wolf is mating with coyotes, okay? And we're getting a hybrid coyote, which is much larger. And the head is much larger than a normal coyote's head compared to the body. The snout is much larger. They're more aggressive. And it actually looks more like a wolf than it does like a coyote, and they're finding them, and these things are attacking people. They're attacking, you know, livestock. They're attacking, you know, people's pets and things like that, and you know, they're just extremely aggressive. People are reporting wolf sightings, you know, and they're not wolves. It's these hybrid coyotes, you know. And I think even Wisconsin, maybe you guys may be having them because like I said, you know, a lot of these northern states, you know, along the Canadian border and stuff, and things up around through there are having issues with this, with these Canadian wolves mating with the coyotes, you know.
Interesting.
And you know, it's weird because, I mean, this was even on the news, man. I mean, they showed one of these things that got hit, and this guy's holding it, and it's just like, you know, this thing was huge, you know.
Do you think that accounts for a lot of, like, what the, I guess here, a lot of the people are calling it the blue chupacabra, whatever, you know, like down in Texas? Do you think it's a lot of just inbreeding or crossbreeding?
You know the whole thing. I was talking with Ken Gerhardt about that, you know, because he'd done a lot with that. Because actually, he had a lot of, you know, hands on, you know, with that. And you know, Ken was saying he thinks it's a breed of dog that probably has not been seen or discovered. He's not sure if it's, you know, maybe like through inbreeding, which is a possibility, you know, and things. But he doesn't really like to call it the chupacabra. You know, he calls it now the blue dog, and that's why because it's a canine. But he says, you know, because he's, like I say, he's actually had his hands on one. And like you said, I mean, there's characteristics about that that is way different from normal canines. You know, he said there's a lot of different characteristics that kind of makes you wonder what this thing is, you know. So, yeah, that kind of makes your head wonder about that. So,
yeah,
you know, because like
new
you said,
species. Dude,
it's a new species, and you know, well, you know, just, you know what they found, you know,
species, maybe?
They found new, you know, a whole new species of gorilla in the Congo. You know, about a year and a half ago.
Yes.
You know, which they, and you know, they're getting ready to take the gorilla off the endangered species list because of the amount of gorillas that they found in the Congo, which they didn't think were there. You know, and stuff. Well, they weren't supposed to be there because that's not where they're supposed to be. You know, gorillas were never known to be in the Congo, you know, and things. And, you know, they found a whole new species, and there was another species of chimpanzee that walks upright and don't completely walk upright, but it does for a while walks upright, but they live on, they don't live so much in the trees. They more stay on the ground, and they're known as lion killers because they attack lions for prey, you know, to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real nasty primate, you know, that's willing to take on a lion, you know. So,
and a smart primate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, the chimpanzee's the closest to, you know, the human, and, you know, as far as, you know, the way, you know, it thinks, and, you know, they work in packs. They, you know, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of same characteristics, you know, between us and them.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about, like, well, since we're speaking of exotic pets, there are a lot of reports around the United States of large cats, especially black cats and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do you think that's a lot of exotic pet, or is that something that's just, you know, like the panther that's possibly just moving to certain areas and being seen now?
No, you know, I found this book a few years ago called The Buckeye Boyhood, and it was written in 1877, okay, by a guy by the name of William Vanderbilt, and he and I'll be talking about this book actually on Monsters and Mysteries, The Grass Man tonight. He wrote this book about him growing up in Ohio in the 1830s. And he talks about this, he has this one chapter called In the Woods, and he talks about the different creatures. And he talks about the black panthers that roamed Ohio. And, you know, and a lot of people are getting reports of these cats. Now, the Division of Wildlife says they've never had black panthers. But the Eastern Puma Society says, yes, they are, because, you know, there's a lot of different states that are now reporting black pumas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a species that basically, you know, I think was killed down so far that there were just a minimum amount of them. And, this, you know, the species was able to survive and build up its numbers throughout the years, you know. And I think it's a comeback. That's why everybody's seeing them. But also in this book, he talks about a creature that would roam the road between Cincinnati and Columbus. They called the Bajespan, which was a Bigfoot, and he describes it between Sinbad's Old Man of the Mountain and a gorilla, which is, you know, kind of a neat thing too, you know. And like I said, this is a, you know, book from 1877.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they even mention that, you know, black panthers, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
stuff. So
adds yeah. a lot of, you know, history to some of the recent reports. You know, I'm originally from Scotland, and they have a lot of reports of black panther sightings over there, and they got some pretty good pictures, in my opinion, of possibly a big cat, you know, living there. But, you know, if you do your history, you know, as a theory, you know, the Romans brought over a lot of exotic pets to the British Isles. Lion and you know, and if these black cats, these black panthers or cougar, whatever have you, survived there, it could be a remnant of something, you know, of that nature. The Romans bringing over, you know, these exotic pets and getting loose and maybe possibly having a breeding population that survived. I mean, there's plenty of prey, you know, mm-hmm. with deer and stuff on the British Isles, you know. But
yeah.
I find that fascinating.
Well, there's belief, when, you know, that, and there's actually some proof that the Chinese discovered America. I mean, they actually step foot on America, you know, and there's belief and there's also stories that they had Yetis with them.
Huh.
You know, and that's where the American Bigfoot came from, because it was these Yetis that they had that they brought to the New World. You know,
I've never heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I've heard that story quite a few times. Actually, I heard it once from a Chinese. told me that story, and I it kind of makes sense because I mean it wasn't like on their first initial voyage, but it was like on one of their passing voyages back over that they brought Yetis with them. To the new world, it's kind of a far-fetched story, but you know, if anything's possible, and stranger things have happened, so that's the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Stranger things have happened.
True.
Yeah.
Well, you seem pretty into all the cryptids, then, huh? What got you started in all this and Bigfoot and cryptozoology?
I was a UFO researcher for years, and I've always had an interest, in some of the cryptid stuff, but my passion at the time was, UFOs. And that was, and that was a big thing. And because we had, the group I belonged to was called AASQ, which was Associates for Scientific Knowledge. It was this cute little name, but it was neat, But the thing that we had that no one else had was that we did a live television show back in the 80s and all the way up into the late 90s on public access TV, and it was a live TV show.
Cool.
first Wednesday of every month, and it was called UFO Update Live. And it played all through the state of Ohio, parts of Kentucky, and I think Indiana and stuff. And we had a really good following, and we had a lot of guests on the show that talked live on the show. You could call in, and talk, and it was great. I mean, people loved it. We had a really, really good following, and we were just getting so many reports of Bigfoot sightings. Some of them were UFO connected and some of them weren't, but I'll tell you right now, I do not believe in a UFO Bigfoot connection at all.
Okay.
I will not touch a Bigfoot sighting that has a UFO sighting to it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I mean, I believe in both of them, but I do not think there's a connection between both. So they wanted someone to take a look into the Bigfoot stuff, because they thought, hey, this would be kind of a new twist for the show, to have like a cryptid side to it, And so myself and George Clapperson, he's one of the guys that wrote the first book with me and Chris Murphy, the first two books rather, and it worked. I mean, we really got in, and it, we did some of the Bigfoot stuff, and the people were just eating it up. We just kept getting more and more stuff, and it's just, I'm like, man, there's something to this, and everybody who does Bigfoot research will sit there and tell you, when you first get into it, it's an obsession. I mean,
absolutely.
It is. It's total obsession. You eat, drink it, everything, man. And that's how it was. And I kind of go off the UFO stuff and, did the Bigfoot stuff. I mean, I did a lot of cryptid stuff because Ohio, we have, like the Loveland Frogman.
Mm-hmm.
We have Betsy,
nice.
Which is a, the lake monster. We have, like I said, different cryptids. We got, the melon heads. The werewolf stuff, that's going on here in Ohio. We just got Mothman sightings along the border with, West Virginia. I mean, just a lot of stuff going on here in Ohio, you know.
Ohio's a crazy state. I mean, because there is so many different cryptids reported there. You know, I live in Oregon, and, you know, predominantly we get the Bigfoot sightings, you know, and Bigfoot encounters with the maybe a dogman sighting tossed in here and some completely off the wall.
For good measure.
Yeah, we've got more cryptids here in Ohio than any other state. You know, and that's kind of, I mean, there's a lot of, yeah, because like you said, there's a lot of weird stuff, man.
where do you guys get your water from? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's something, because like I said, there's a lot of weird stuff that, you know, that goes on here. I mean, you know, like I said, well, you know, I mean, we've had other type of winged entity type sightings and stuff here, other than like Mothman stuff. You know, like I said, a lot of dogman sightings. Like I said, the Melonheads, the Loveland Frogman. You know, the different.
What's a Melonhead?
The Melonheads. It's these, their children that was in this orphanage, and this doctor was doing some very nasty experiments on these children. He owned an orphanage, and he did some very nasty experiments on the children by putting water, different chemicals in their heads, and was trying to expand their heads and expand their brains, you know, and he would just do medical experiments on the children, you know, for his own work. You know, the guy was just a sick bastard. Excuse my French, but
kind of like the Nazis.
Yeah, and he did some, and it was causing the children, you know, to look more alien. I mean, their teeth were basically turning sharp. You know, I mean, there's a lot of the chemicals were doing a lot of nasty stuff to these kids, but his wife was really loving to the children. You know, and she didn't like it, but she was being abused by, you know, by him and things like that. So, but she tried to protect the kids the best she could. And this took place like back in the 40s and stuff. And so the kids did love her because, you know, she did try her best to protect the children. And then one day the wife fell and busted her head open and ended up killing herself. And it was an accident. So the children thought the doctor did it, so they killed him, set the orphanage on fire, and ran to the woods. And throughout the years, people would see these mutilated children, and they would, you know, come like attack their cars and attack them. You know, they would, you know, attack livestock and things like that. It was just some really weird stuff, you know, that took place. And actually, I think next week or the week after, on Monsters and Mysteries, I'm talking about the Melonheads, you know, and things, because they just had a sighting, you know, and I'll be talking about that. But, I mean, you know, that's kind of, you know, kind of the weird stuff. But like I said, you know, there's this, you know, there's demon sightings. I mean, there's some pretty weird stuff. There's a guy that put a map out called Hidden Ohio, which is kind of a neat app, you know, that has all the different cryptids, UFOs and ghost sightings and stuff. It's really neat, yeah. So
yeah, it's a good reference.
Kind of sounds like Wisconsin.
Yeah.
A lot of different cryptids and monsters in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Interesting.
You
don't know about all these little things until you do a little research.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's a really good book out. If you can find it, either on Amazon or like at a half-price book, it's called The Monster Spotter's Guide. And it's a really awesome book. And what it is, it's if you're traveling across the country, if you go through like Wisconsin, you open it up and you look under Wisconsin, it tells you about all the different cryptids that's in that state. And it has a little story about each one, and it's really neat. It has, you know, every single state in there, even has Canada and Mexico, and it has a neat little map, you know, colored map in the back with all the different cryptids, you know, and the states and stuff. And it's really neat. And like I said, it's called The Monster Spotter's Guide, and two guys from Cincinnati, where I'm from, actually wrote the book. And it's I'm telling you, it's probably one of the best cryptid books out there. And this is the neatest reading material, you know, and I think anybody who's into cryptozoology should have this book in their, you know, in their collection.
Yeah, I've heard of the book. I don't own it myself, but we do have listeners from Mexico to Canada, so something that maybe they should look into.
I mean, it talks about some of the stuff that's going on up in Alaska, you know, some of the, you know, cryptids up there that I didn't even know. There's stuff in this book I didn't even know about, you know, some of the different cryptids. I mean, these guys, you know, really took time out to do their research on the cryptids, you know. And the artwork is really, really good, too. So, I mean, like I said, it's a good book to get a hold of.
Now, Jody, what are your thoughts on, like, Dogman and Bigfoot? Do you think a lot of those, a lot of the sightings between Bigfoot and Dogman are misidentification between one or the other, or are they, do you think there's a possibility they're two complete species of something?
I think they're two different species. At one time, I really thought that, you know, a lot of these Dogman sightings were Bigfoot sightings. You know, it was a Bigfoot that had maybe like a protrude snout, you know. But when you start looking at the descriptions of the Dogman with the backwards legs, you know, the high ears, you know, they're just things in some of these reports that don't add up to what a Bigfoot sighting would be, you know. When Monster Quest did their two werewolf shows, you know, they threw in Bigfoot sightings in some of theirs, and they knew they were Bigfoot sightings, but they just didn't have enough to go with, you know, on Dogman sightings, because, you know, they really just didn't take the time out to actually talk to, you know, researchers, you know. And there's really not a whole, you know, I mean, there's just a handful of researchers out there that do Dogman stuff that I mean, you know, Johnny Bigfoot, there's myself, there's, you know, there's Brian Speech, there's, Linda Goffrey, there's, there's one more guy and I can't think of his, down in, there's two more guys, and I can't think of their name off the top of my head. One of them's Adams Davies is the other one, and what's that guy in Kentucky? The one that did the hunt for the Dog Man.
I knew you were talking about.
I can't think of his name off the top of my head. And, you know, and there's him. You know, I mean, and, you know, that's it. I mean, you know, that's all the people that I know of that actually does any, like, full-time, you know, research on the Dogman stuff, you know. And, well, there's Raven Mandel, up in, Michigan. You know, she does it, too. But there's just not a whole lot, you know. But anyhow, well, let's go back to say that they didn't put a whole lot of time in going to the right people, you know, to do this. And, you know, Monsters and Mysteries, actually, they did, you know, when they put their show together, and actually it's on now, their werewolf, you know, show about, you know, Wisconsin and, you know, Michigan. At least they got people, you know, and they threw in a Wendigo, which is, you know, Wendigo really has nothing really to do with the Dog Man. You know, because it's a Native American folklore, you know, as a spiritual, you know, creature. But it's not a Dog Man.
Jody, have you heard of the Hide Behind?
I've heard like one or two things about it. I don't know a whole lot about it.
Yeah,
you know,
one of our previous guests, Apex Encounters, he went into detail. He's out of the Carolinas, and you went into detail about the Hide Behind, and I found that really fascinating because it does kind of represent that kind of like baboon-like, almost dogman-like appearance, and has a lot of characteristics of that. And the Native Americans talk a lot about the Hide Behind.
Yeah, see, the Native Americans, they talk about both species, Bigfoot and the Dogman, you know. But, you know, both species always stayed away from each other. But the difference is that the Native Americans looked at Bigfoot as a Native American, as an Indian.
Yeah.
You know, they looked at it as a man. You know, the Dogman, they always looked at it as a magical, you know, mystery creature. I can't really say it like that, but they more of a flesh and blood animal. You know, they believed Bigfoot. They knew Bigfoot was flesh and blood too, but they always did look at it as a man, as one of their own. You know, so. But you know, like I said, I really think that, you know, I don't think there are that many of them of the Dogmen, because if you look at, you know. Because Linda Godfrey and I actually, we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were talking, that if you look at, you know, the sightings compared to, you know, Bigfoot sightings are all over the place. They're all over the United States. You know, when you get into, like, Eastern Europe and some parts of Western Europe, and then, you know, you got all through Asia and things like that, Australia, you know, even Africa is having, you know, Bigfoot sightings, you know.
Yeah.
But Dogman sightings, I mean, they're limited here in the United States to, you know, when you go from, like, New York State going all the way over to Minnesota, and then you come back down, you know, through, you know, come back down to, you know, Kentucky and back up. That's where the majority of all the sightings are taking place in the United States. You know, there's a pocket of them that's happening in California, and then you have a pocket that's happening, like, in South Carolina and North Carolina and the Alabama area, and then, like, down in Texas. But they're just small pockets, and they're just small amount of sightings. But it's not like what's going on in this huge pocket, you know, in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you get in Europe, it's all in Eastern Europe. You know, France is not having any more werewolf sightings other than...
No.
You know, what was going on, you know, 300 years ago and stuff. Everything's happening in Eastern Europe now, okay? Even Asia, you know, a lot of their sightings are all in Eastern Asia, you know, and things. And, you know, Australia's not having Dogman sightings. You know, Africa's not having Dogman sightings and stuff. Middle East isn't having Dogman sightings. So, I mean, it's just, like I said, it's very limited, you know, so they can't be that many of them. You know, I mean, Christ, there are even Bigfoot sightings in the Middle East, you know.
Right.
And
oh, yeah, so. Yeah. My brother was in he was stationed in Afghanistan and heard a few tales over there.
I was in Iraq, and I heard about some of the sightings and when I was in Iraq, you know, and things. I mean, hell, I was, when we had to go in Kuwait City. When we first got there, we went into Kuwait. We had to go into Kuwait City to get all of our gear and stuff because everything came in through Kuwait City. And the Kuwaiti Navy was out there looking for this lake, you know, sea monster, and, you know, and stuff out there. They talk about mermaids and stuff. I mean, and, you know, it's not so much that they're superstitious. I mean, they see these things, and, you know, and they're serious as a heart attack. And we're sitting there on the dock, you know, watching the Kuwaiti Navy, you know, go up and down, you know, throwing, you know, these, rope in with these hooks and stuff, trying to hook this thing. You know, it's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, there's this sea monster that keeps getting in the way down there. He's always sitting there. I'm like, are you guys serious? And they're like, yeah, they're serious. It's a heart attack, you know, and stuff. So, you know, weirder stuff.
Yeah.
Man.
Really weird stuff.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misidentifications both way. People see a Bigfoot, you know, when it's really, they think it's a dog man, or they see a dog man, think it's a Bigfoot. Linda made that point that in some of those TV shows, there's a lot of discrepancies, and they, you know, call something one thing when it actually was reported to her as something else. And, I think, you know, I don't think it's, the dog man is a Bigfoot, you know. For a minute there, I speculated on the theory that maybe these ones in southern Wisconsin, maybe they were big fits with pointier ears because they needed to hear better because they were stuck in more smaller isolated pockets of woods and they were a little bit smaller, and you know that they evolved differently, but now I think that they're their own species or entity or whatever.
Oh yeah, they definitely are. They're definitely their own species.
Well, the Beast of Seven Chutes is a a picture that's always intrigued me,
mm-hmm.
and that was that's not in the States here, but it's always intrigued me. What are your thoughts on that, Jody?
Yeah, I mean, that's not far from, actually from where I'm at. That's just a few hours north of me,
mm-hmm.
Because that's just right there in Quebec, Canada.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of sightings in that park of this creature. And what I found so unique about this photograph is that it's a werewolf. Because the mouth is open. You can see the tongue. You can see the teeth. And it looks like a German Shepherd's head on a big
Or baboon-like. It's got a lot, to me, it's got a lot of characteristics of being almost baboon-like, but German Shepherd-like as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because it's got a large snout. It definitely has a large snout.
Right.
It's holding a small dog, and
it's like a poodle.
Yeah, but if you look at the fur on the dog's face, that's the thing. You can see, that's what makes, I think, this whole thing so real, is that the fur on the dog's face,
it's
that's
ruffled.
Holding.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see the fur in its face, and this thing is just, it's just, the expression on the face of this creature, it's taunting the guy taking a picture, but the guy, the person who took a picture never saw it.
Yeah, that's wild.
Because if you look at the original picture, he's taking a picture of the waterfall and he's standing on a bridge, and this thing is below him. And if you don't look for it, you're not going to see it in the picture. And that's the thing, But even though when you blow
how
it up,
perfect.
Yeah, and even when you blow
a
it up,
a dog man holding a dog.
Yeah, but it's a national park, and they've had animals missing and stuff up there, but they've had sightings of it, and things, it's just, the dog man is the new cryptid. It's definitely the new cryptid. Why hasn't anyone already picked up on it as far as doing a show? That's my thing. Why hasn't it been done yet? The interest
that Monsters
is out
and
there.
Mysteries did a pretty cool one.
They did
two
it
weeks ago.
I have no problem telling the listeners, Johnny Bigfoot, myself, Brian Speech, we've all part of right now, with Destination America, talking with them about doing a show on werewolves,
mm-hmm.
Just doing investigations on, werewolf sightings, not so much like finding Bigfoot, but something similar to that, but it dealing more with, with werewolf stuff.
Excellent.
And when I talked with, Destination Truth about it, I kind of explained to them, how the best way to do it, how it should be done, it needs to be done something like UFO hunters. It has to be done in a serious point. It can't be done like mountain monsters, you can't have people running through the woods, hey, there's a werewolf sighting, and then you're running through your to your car and you're speeding to the location and and stuff.
Sort of a realistic approach.
Yeah. And stuff. So
yeah, I like that what was it? You know, they did the Wendigo, they did the Michigan Dogman, they did the Beast of Bray Road, and
Bray Road,
the production
yeah.
was just super cool.
Yeah, actually, this was their best. Well, the thing of it is, I mean, anything dealing with Dogman or werewolf stuff is high rated stuff. Even Paranormal Witness, you know, when when they did the Wolf Pack, you know, that was their highest rating show. You know, that was their highest rating show for Paranormal Witness. You know, so.
Well, Jody, how many reports do you take in that are you can? I mean, how many reports compared to say, you know, how many reports between Dogman and Bigfoot do you take in? Obviously, I would think Bigfoot would outnumber the Dogman sightings. Am I right?
Oh, they are. I mean, I get pretty many of the Bigfoot stuff. I mean, the Dogman stuff. Is very limited. I would say probably on the Dogman stuff, you know, 5 a year, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, really dependent, you know, it depends on how far I want to push it. I'm sure there's a lot more out there if I decide to, you know, to really push on getting some of the sightings. You know, checking more of the sightings and stuff out and stuff. But there's a lot going on further, further north, you know. It's just, you know, getting up there and checking into a lot of these sightings and stuff like that. I mean, Ohio's, like I said, been very well known for the werewolf stuff. I mean, you know, back in the 70s, we had Defiance, Ohio case, and a lot of people may have heard it, may not. Back in the 70s, for a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf type creature, and it's actually attacked, two railroad workers, killed livestock, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on, made national news, made international news, you know. And things, so a lot of weird stuff happened, throughout that week, and then all of a sudden it just died off. But you know, small little towns up through there, like Akron and Norton, you know, throughout the years were getting werewolf sightings, you know, and things. So you know, there's still a lot of activity going on. You know, there's I'm working on a case I've been working on for a few years. You know, there's a Metro Park up in Akron, that has something in that park there, and it's described as a werewolf, and the rangers have seen it. You know, the park district even knows about it, and their comment to me was, we know about it, but we don't like to talk about it, and that's their official comment, and, you know, like I said, I've had a ranger even sit there and actually saw this thing. You know, gave me a drawing of it. You know, I was up there within, 12 hours after the sighting. And found tracks.
And this is in city limits?
Yeah, this is in city limits. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of these dogman, werewolf-type sightings will occur closer to city limits and in smaller, I guess, patches of woods and things than a Bigfoot sighting might.
I would imagine, in my opinion, that if they're coming that close, I mean, there's a lot of easy prey within those limits. You're not talking about stalking deer, not you're talking about cattle and whatnot. It'd be a lot easier prey
roadkill.
Within those limits.
Well,
yeah, roadkill. Yeah,
right. But you see, even in Germantown, Ohio, there's having sightings of a werewolf, creature down there, that's attacking livestock, where it's actually attacked cattle and mutilated cattle. And I've seen some of the pictures of some of the cattle that were mutilated. And, there's nothing in Ohio. You know, we have bear here, and I know we've got, large cats, but, there's nothing I know of in Ohio that's big enough to take down a cow and literally do some of the stuff that it did to this cow, you know, and things.
Oh,
I mean, you know, even the tracks that were close to it were very large, like dog style tracks. You know, they found clothing, you know, bloody clothing, you know, on sides of road and stuff up there. I'm not kidding, man. These guys drive around in pickup trucks. I mean, literally, when I'm telling you this, I'm not kidding you. They drive around in pickup trucks with guns, you know, at night, you know, watching their neighborhoods and their farms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because, I mean, there's something there, you know.
Wow.
And, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff.
So there's a general fear, I mean, of whatever this is.
Yeah, but I mean, if you sit there and think about it, you know, there's no really reports of one actually attacking and killing a human or even doing any type of bodily harm to a human other than scaring the crap out of someone. You know, that's
well,
the thing.
That shows a certain intelligence.
Yeah, they're intelligent there, but they'll attack livestock and things like that for food and prey. They know what a human is, and I think they know, you know, a human can kill, and, you know, or a human's got a boomstick or whatever, gun or whatever you want to call
yeah.
it. You know, they know that, and so they know they're not going to sit there and do anything unless it's necessary. And it's the same thing with a Bigfoot, you know. You know, there's really no documented sighting, you know, documented stuff of a Bigfoot attacking, you know, a human, you know.
They'll scare us.
Yeah, they'll scare you, but they're not gonna kill you. You know.
Well, there's a ton of reports of Bigfoot doing the same thing, bluff charges, you know, throwing rocks and that sort of. Yeah,
I talk about that in my book. I mean, it just really depends on what part of the country you're from. Now, east of the Rockies, you know, they're extremely aggressive. You know, they're more docile the further west you go. I mean, you know, they're much larger. I mean, they don't like human contact. They'll more or less hide, you know. But, I mean, here, you know, like I say, even out towards where you guys are, I mean,
yeah.
you'll get sticks thrown at you. You'll get the grunts. You'll get rocks and stuff. That's not a habit that takes place, you know, out west, unless, you know, you're harassing them. Then they'll do it. But here, you know, I mean, I've had sticks, large sticks and rocks and stuff thrown at me, you know, here. You know,
yeah.
and things. I mean, hell, even the film crew, when they did the Ohio Grassman here for Monsters and Mysteries, was out and had, you know, sticks thrown at them in the woods. You know, when they went out on their own, and you know they're off the side of the road, and you know doing some filming, and large sticks are being thrown out of the woods at them.
Yeah.
Know.
What was your feedback from them as far as that happening?
Well, I didn't know about it until after, you know, because they were doing a bunch of B-rolling after, all, you know, they did all the interviews,
yeah,
you know, and stuff. And I found out, you know, that morning, you know, because we saw them off the side of the road because, you know, we were going out doing some, you know, go out to the woods and stuff. So we were going out to the woods that night, and that's when, you know, we saw them off to the road, you know, filming, so we didn't want to stop because, you know, hell, they're filming. We didn't want to, you know, stop and, you know, disturb them or anything. And so, but, it was that's what happened with them.
Yeah, because I have some experience with what I call aggressive behavior. I've had a tree pushed over close to my camp. I've heard the grunts and whatnot, but, I mean, generally, I don't find that Bigfoot in general, I won't say Dogman, but Bigfoot in general to be aggressive up here. And they do, in my opinion, avoid people for the most part. They may come into your camp or area early morning hours when they have the advantage, you know, you're asleep and whatnot. But, you know, Dogman's something new to me in this area just because it doesn't happen.
It's like I was talking to this one guy. He was in his 70s, and the guy's a hunter. And this was up in, you know, right outside the Akron area. And he went out. He was in the wood line, comes out of the wood line, and goes into an opening. Okay, it's kind of a small opening. And, you know, we were just talking out of the blue about other stuff, and then, you know how the Bigfoot stuff, and these go into conversation, and he tells me this story, he said, he gets up into the open area, and he said five dog man came out on him, circled him, I'm serious. I mean, this guy, I mean, the way he was telling the story, I really believed him, because I just felt he had no reason to lie, because the way he was describing him, the way he was saying, he kept saying these large dogs that walked upright, is what he kept saying.
What state was this in?
This is Ohio. This is Ohio. Okay. And he said there was five of them. They circled them. He said they looked like dogs. He said he described them more as coyotes. But he said they walked upright. Their hands were kind of like humans, but they were longer fingers, and stuff. But he said only one of them showed aggression. The other ones didn't. The other ones just kind of like stayed back a little bit. Just the one in front kind of like showed aggression. And he said they basically kind of like walked him out back into the wood line.
Wow.
And stuff.
It's rare enough to see one of them, but to see five.
Yeah, I mean, he said there was five of them, but he said none of them showed any type of aggression except for the one. I guess it would have been the pack leader, maybe. But he said that was the only one that showed any aggression, any growling, snarling, But he said they kept coming towards him, kind of like walking him out. He said, I had a gun. I could have. But he felt that, if he would have shot one, they all would have been on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he said the whole time they're walking upright on two legs. He said the whole time. They're on two legs the whole time. But he said once he got them into the tree line, they stopped, and he ran, But, I mean, but he was describing, like, their hair, the color of their hair, the high ears, and stuff. But I just, I just felt the story was so incredible. It's just like, but he goes, I never go hunting again. I'll never go outside again. Never again.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only time I've heard of more than one was Katie Zahn's story there in southern Wisconsin when her and her friends came upon three. She was on that Monster Quest episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that'll
scare you.
Well, it's like the one sighting of the ranger at the Metro Park in Akron. He saw it. I mean, he knew that there was something in the park. He never saw it. He heard about it, from some of the other rangers and stuff that were there. He talked to people and took reports from people who've seen it, but he said, it's about, I think he said it was about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And, he was getting into his car. He looked off to his left, and he sees a dog on the tree line sitting there looking at him. He was saying, beautiful dog, husky. It was the way he was describing this thing. But he said it just had these weird eyes. It had this weird look on his face. And he had a part of a sandwich or something. He was trying to call it over, did give him his sandwich and stuff because he figured, it was cold, dog bag wants something to eat, and it wouldn't come over to him. So he throws it over to him, and he figured, the dog would have came out, and the dog wouldn't. So he decided, he's going to get in his car, backs up the vehicle, pulls forward where the headlights hits the dog, and he said that's when it stands up on two legs and looks right at him, and just turns and just, jots off on two legs and goes, across the road.
Yeah.
That was his sighting. I mean, he saw it, and he was about, 20 or 30 yards away or something like that, 40 yards, I think, at the most. I mean, but it was still, his headlights were on it. He saw this thing, when he got home, he told his wife, and his wife called her friend up who was with a paranormal group up there, and she actually called me because I did a conference. I spoke at one of their conferences up there, and she called me and told me, and I drove up there, that night. And got up there that morning, drove 5 hours, man, because it was, met him and, talked to him, got his drawing, his eyewitness drawing, and got pictures of the tracks where it was standing. We counted 168 tracks where it came out of the wood line,
Wow.
And the tracks are very human, but it had very large claw marks. And
wow.
I think I posted some of them on the Facebook page on DFRO
mm-hmm.
page on Facebook. I think I posted some of them on there, some of the pictures.
Well, if you get a chance.
Where was that
one
you posted
in
the snow?
That was in Illinois. And that's kind of a unique case. The guy actually was hearing howling out in his back, and his dog was kind of going, stupid. And he goes out there, and he didn't see anything, but he found these tracks that were coming through his backyard out of the woods there. but there was quite a few of them. And, I mean, those tracks are beautiful tracks,
Yeah, those are big.
Those are huge. I mean, and Linda Goffrey, I sent it to Linda Goffrey, and, she was saying that was very, very unique of a dogman track because it had that back pad back there, But that was probably, that's one of the best, dogman tracks I've ever seen, was that one.
Yeah, I mean, I know snow can make tracks, like you say, appear a little bit different or bigger, but that was like big.
Yeah, they,
big.
Weren't that much snow on the ground. You can tell they weren't that much snow on the ground, at all. But, this was huge, whatever made that print. I mean, it was huge.
Wow.
Yeah, if you did post those other ones at DFRO, I'll have to look and see.
If not,
I'll repost them
tonight.
Or repost them in Monster X Radio. I'd love to see them. I haven't seen these,
And Monster X Radio, is that a website or is that a Facebook?
It's on Facebook. Yeah, it's on Facebook. I'd love to see them, yeah.
Yeah, put the link down on the DFRO, and
okay.
I'll put the drawings down there because I got another drawing from that same sighting where it ran across a road and a woman almost hit it.
Huh.
And it's her eyewitness drawing,
Gotcha.
And stuff. So, yeah. But it was kind of neat.
Oh, I didn't realize there's so much action down there.
Yeah. Linda Goffrey was actually doing an investigation in Norton, which is about an hour east, or an hour west, rather, at the same time that I was in Akron.
Oh, really?
This investigation, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, it sounds like it.
Yeah, a lot
yeah,
of.
Yeah, we're starting to get reports here in Minnesota too. There's a few of them that I want to look into the areas more as soon as it warms up. Yeah,
right.
It's like the more you research and the more you learn and the more you realize that there are some sightings and encounters in places you didn't think there would be.
Yeah, but you know what? It's just these dogman sightings. There's a lot going on right now because I really think that you know their population is getting stronger. You know, and they're getting in numbers, and that's why you're seeing a lot of them, and that's why you're getting a lot of reports and a lot of sightings of them in numbers, which you never ever got until just recent years. You know, it's like the wolf pack. You know, that was, you know, five or six of them in that particular case there, you know, and things, you know, which is, you know, I found that to be a unique case, you know.
Yeah. Jody, I wanted to talk to you about the Bentonville, I think it's Bentonville, the handprint that was taken that was on the show.
Yeah.
You know, that was a really fascinating handprint and had some science back, you know, that kind of backed it up with the dermal ridges and whatnot. And that,
yeah.
I don't remember the guy's name that actually did the research on it, but, you know, he said this was a living animal.
Yeah, Johnny Chilcutt.
Yeah,
he's an FBI fingerprint expert, and he's the only primate fingerprint expert in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy Chilcutt. I'm sorry, Jimmy Chilcutt.
Yes.
And the FBI, like I said, they had it for quite some time, and he said that it was made from a living hand. It wasn't made from a mole. It wasn't made from, you know, a cast or anything.
Right.
Whatever made that handprint was a living creature.
I mean, how seriously awesome is that? I mean,
he even said either one, it's a gorilla or it's a Bigfoot. And that's what he said. He said it's one of the two.
Yeah,
and
to me, that's fascinating.
And,
I mean, just
yeah,
awesome.
And that's, you know, he put it in writing. It's one of the two, you know.
Your Joe Smo looking at it going,
what's so unique about that case is that it was in Adams County again, okay, and Adams County is the poorest county in the state of Ohio. Okay, there's people there that still don't have electricity in their homes, and majority of a lot of the people live in trailers. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. They're really good, friendly people. It's just it's just economically wise. It's not a good part of the, you know, the state to grow your family. But there's a lot of national forests there. They're the Wayne National Forest. They're the Shawnee National Forest. I mean, there's just a lot of forest down there.
Yeah.
And there was a young girl and her sister-in-law was in the trailer. And girl's husband was gone. And it was storming real bad. And they kept hearing this thing screaming outside the trailer. They kept hearing these screams and stuff. And at one time, it actually either was hitting on side the trailer or was throwing stuff at the trailer, which I think it was throwing stuff at the trailer. Because there's a ravine that kind of comes kind of behind the trailer. Okay. And because this thing, where the handprint and stuff is, this thing came out of the ravine. Because the reason why it's only a partial handprint, because there was a tree branch that was there that when it put its hand down to get out of the ravine, its palm and its thumb was on the branch, and pushed it so far down into the mud. And that's why you only got the top part of the hand. But there was a beautiful foot cast, you know, footprints, rather, you know, and stuff. But it was, like I said, in a ravine, and I think it was just going down this ravine in the storm and, you know, throwing stuff at the trailer. And then just at one point it got out of the ravine and went into the tree line and stuff. But the husband came home the following morning. The two girls were cowered in the closet, you know, which I don't blame them. You know, they had the shotgun and stuff. And they told the story, and then, you know, he went out and he, you know, found these tracks. And he made castings of them, you know, the handprint and the cast and stuff. And, I got a hold of them through an acquaintance and stuff and got out there. And it took me a lot of begging to get the handprint, you know. I wanted one of the foot cast to go along with it, but he wanted to keep, you know, the foot cast. But the handprint I thought was more of a unique piece, and it took a lot of bargaining to get it, you know, and you know and stuff. But I got it, and but like I said, the whole story behind it was kind of unique and stuff. And they've seen it before, and they say it would go down through this this ravine. So I decided I'm going to come back and set up, a camera down here and see if I can, you know, probably get this thing. And the trailer's gone. I mean, they done packed their crap up and left, you know. So and I wasn't going to stay out there by myself, and this, you know, and things, but you know, I stayed up there, you know, and got a camera set up, trail cam set up, and went back a couple of days later, and you know, I didn't get anything except, you know, just small game and things, but you know, but apparently to them this thing would go up and down this ravine, and the ravine's probably was about 4 feet, and it just was just one, you know, one leap up, you know. You know, it just put its leg up there and, you know, and then stopped to get up there through this thing. So, but you know, it was kind of unique. I even had a palm reader look at the hand, you know, and stuff, and got some really, and this palm reader, you know, because a friend of mine, whose wife was a palm reader, he told his wife about it, and she goes, let me look at it, let me see it. And, you know, and she looked at it, and she just, you know, was looking at it, and she goes, here, I don't even want to touch this thing. I mean, just, you know, she didn't want nothing to do with it, you know, and stuff. But I thought it was just kind of a unique thing, just, you know, having a palm reader look at it. But yeah, like I said, you know, there's just, you know, that's physical evidence. But the thing of what bothered me so much about it, about this thing, it's just that the fingers were just kind of small. And so I don't know if it was a small youth, you know, but it was going to be in the book, Meet the Sasquatch. I don't know if you're familiar with this book. It's a really good book that was put out, but they didn't put it in there because some of the people that who dealt with the Skookum cask, which I believe is not a Bigfoot body, but a moose or an elk rather. They felt that the hand cast was going to oversee the Skookum cast, so they didn't want that. They didn't want it in there. So I was pretty pissed about. Excuse my French, but I was pretty upset about that. That they cut it out of that book because of, you know, the Skookum cast, because they felt that it was going to, you know, overview the Skookum cast.
Overshadow,
which, like I said, I don't believe the Skookum cast. I mean, because the thing of it is, you got to understand, you know, there's a lot of stuff that was going on with that with that whole thing, Animal X, it was their last night they were doing a show. Why did these guys have, 200 pounds of plaster with them already? You know, it was the only site that they didn't have a camera on. It was the only site that no one was there watching it. It was the, there was just a lot of stuff.
Well, it's very questionable, yes.
Yeah, that's questionable about that. And if you look at, it's only like 4 foot by 3 foot, okay, the cast itself. It's very small, okay? So it's not that big. But, I'm a big guy, okay? I sit there and I played with this thing for a long time, okay? There is no way that how this thing was laying there, first of all, could have got there without running and jumping and falling into that position, okay, is the first thing.
Yeah.
If you lay down in that position that it was laying in, there's no way that you could have got up out of that position without putting your palm down to the ground and pushing your body upwards first and then, pushing your knee backwards or pushing your knee forward and putting your knee in the ground and standing up. Okay? I mean, there's no way his body could have got up without him putting his palm down to the ground. Okay,
yeah.
And pushing his body up. There's just no way. So I mean, hey, they've got primatologists that was working on that case. But my thing is, I'm telling you, I don't care what anybody says. Okay, just because you have a PhD doesn't mean jack crap. All it's going to do is get you a cup of coffee at McDonald's with a dollar. That's it. Okay, and I'm serious. Because, just because you have a PhD doesn't make you more knowledgeable than anybody else in this field. I'm telling you. Until colleges start teaching Bigfootology or cryptozoology,
Cody, I love you, man. I totally agree.
you don't know more shit. I'm sorry. Excuse my French. But you just don't know more than anybody else. And I'm serious. I mean, these people with PhDs come into the field. And this is my biggest thing why I didn't go on the $10 million Bigfoot hunt. Okay?
Yeah.
Because I interviewed for that show, and my thing was who was doing the judging.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know who was doing the judging. And I said that, you don't need a scientist, or someone with a PhD telling someone like me, and I sat and I told him, I said, listen, there is no experts in this field. There's no experts. The thing has never been proven to exist.
None.
So, there's no experts. But, I've been doing this for 20 years plus, and I don't need somebody with a PhD who's never done anything with Bigfoot trying to tell me how to Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the thing. And I say, what you need is to have a Bigfoot researcher, judge the show, not somebody with a PhD. Now, the two people that are judging this show are non-believers. Okay?
Yeah.
And they're very non-believers. And the thing of it is, they're not going to find anything else out there that has not been found before. There's been hair samples that has been found that is came back, questionable that might be something. There have been scat that has been found that's questionable that might be something. Cast, these guys aren't going to find anything. And here's the thing, not one, they interviewed over 50 researchers. 50 researchers, not one of them's on that show. Okay?
Right.
For one, that tells you something. Two, there's a rumor that they had to go to a casting agency in order to get people for that show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? To get extra people for that show. Now, if they've got $10 million to put up, okay, which they really don't have $10 million, they say they do, but I don't think they've got it. you know.
Really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter, because what they want is a body when they're not going to get a body, okay? And they're already, you know, there's stuff coming up on that show that's going to be questioned anyhow, you know.
Well, hey, Jody, real quick, we have a caller that's been waiting online for quite a while. I want to take them, but I would love to end our show with what we were talking about now, because it really is fascinating and it's current. But let's take this caller here and see what they have to say.
Yeah, it's our good friend Dan Baker of the Danasco Project.
Hello, Dan.
How you doing?
Hi,
Dan?
How are you guys tonight?
Great, Dan. How you
Great,
doing?
Great, man.
Good. Hey, the reason I called in is, you know, I heard Jody talking a little bit earlier about, you know, something that could possibly kill and drag a cow around. We have a research area that we are, you know, starting to go to pretty hot and heavy. Last fall, the first time we were there, we were riding up along a ridge line just on the outside of a tree line. And my wife, Sue, happened to see a tree break. And so we hopped out of the four-wheelers and headed up into the woods. And I was heading for this tree break, and Paul Hayes was right next to me. And I was probably two, three steps ahead of Paul. And Paul all at once said, "Hey, wait a minute, stop." And so I stopped and turned around and looked down, and we found right there, within a 15-foot radius, the remains of three cows.
Yeah, and Dan, let's, you know, just to be specific, you're in Ohio, so...
Right, we're in Ohio.
Yeah.
Not too far from Jody, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, I think a Bigfoot could do it, honestly, and I do think they eat meat. You look at an animal that large, okay, he's going to have 5,000 calories or more in order to abstain, you know, himself in a day.
Yeah,
you know,
one of the things that I wanted to point out was we found some of the bones were broken, like the femur,
mm-hmm.
Top part of the femur, you know, like the ball joint.
Yeah.
The one part of that ball joint was actually snapped off, like that leg was twisted.
I found deer like that where the legs have been twisted off. I mean, I've got pictures of deer where the back legs were twisted off, where they've been gutted, the neck has been broke. But what's odd about these things, both legs have been ripped off. The entrails are laying next to the body. Okay, so whatever it was, it was digging for something inside, maybe like the liver or something where the protein is.
Sure.
But these things were laying dead for quite a few days. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever did it left a scent or something on it that kept other predators away. Because if it was any other predator, they would have ran off with the two legs that were taken off or the entrails that were laying next to it. And I thought that was weird. And I found quite a few deers in Ohio like that, because, you know, you see the entrails are already turning brown. So that means that they've been out, you know, in the environment for a few days,
right.
You know, and, but like I said, even with the both back legs twisted off, you know, even though if they were coyotes and stuff, I mean, they would have took the legs and ran off. Even with the entrails, they would have took the entrails and ran off. But they were still laying there,
mm-hmm.
You know. And you can see, you know, one of them, you can see, you know, where the white hair on the bottom of the deer is, you know, all on the ground where it was laying and where it was dragged out. Whatever it was, this thing was able to go up onto a deer while it was sleeping. You know, and humans, I mean, we're noisier in hell when we go out to the field. I mean, we talk, we make so much noise and stuff. Predators
right.
know ahead of time that we're there. But, you know, some of these deers, man, were asleep when this thing came up on them.
What we
you
really
know?
Thought was strange was three cattle all within that very small space, like a 15-foot radius. We also found broken ribs, so, you know, it kind of led us to believe that, you know, these things may have died by, you know, blunt force trauma. You know, maybe it, you know, something grabbed and twisted the legs to immobilize them and then just, you know, clobbered them.
I'll give you a stranger story. Back in September, here in Ohio, about 40 minutes from where I live, a farmer goes out to his goes out to his farm area, and he had two large horses and two ponies. The ponies are gone. The metal fence is pushed down. Okay, oh. Whatever was pushed down got inside, grabbed the ponies, took the ponies, carried them, picked them up, and carried them out, and took them into the this field and killed them. Completely ripped the head off of one of them. Okay. And was chasing the other large horses around because the large horses and the back part of them had scratch marks on the back. Okay, and one of them had a large scratch mark, a really large, going down the side of its neck, which was probably about maybe a foot long, maybe the whole length of the horse's neck.
Wow. Is there any pictures of this?
Huh?
Is there any pictures of this post? This is fascinating.
Here it gets even stranger because when the Division of Wildlife got there and the Sheriff's Department got there, they destroyed all the tracks that were in the area. Okay, huh. And they took all the pictures that were taken by the farmer. Okay, except for one. Okay, and that farmer's. To this day, is still seeing Division of Wildlife and camouflage and stuff with weapons up on his property. So they're looking for something. Whatever it was able to carry these ponies one at a time off to an area and kill them. Didn't eat them, but yeah. It just broke the neck of one, tore the head off the other one. But he was able, like I said, was trying to get the larger horses because you were able to see the scratch marks and stuff on the back and the one scratch mark on the neck. But, he said, like you said, the Sheriff's Department and the Division of Wildlife both destroyed all the tracks and stuff that were in there. I mean, they literally went in there and with a rake, so they were covering up what the attack was. And then, he has no idea. He has no idea what it was, and they won't tell him what it was. But he says when he sees them, they run, when they see him, the Division of Wildlife. He said these guys are out there in, camouflage suits and stuff, dressed like trees and stuff like that, and they're with guns. So they're tracking something out there that was able to do this, And like I said, he will tell you, Ohio, we're farmland. The majority of all the population in Ohio are within the cities, and then everything else is farmland. And then you have the people out, that's farm. But Ohio is like a very large wooded area.
Right.
We have a lot of farmland. We're a dairy state. We have a lot of cows. We have a lot of pigs. And stuff. We have a small forest inside the city of Cincinnati called Mount Airy Forest. And we have a slaughterhouse, okay, Conn's Meats. A cow escaped from it, got into this small forest. For 2 weeks in this little bitty forest, this cow hid. And they went in there with search parties, thermal imaging and everything, and they still weren't able to find this little cow, this big cow in this little bitty forest inside the city of Cincinnati, okay? But people were seeing this mysterious cow. So if this thing can hide, if a cow can hide in this little bitty forest in the middle of a city, God knows what could hide out in these, woods.
Something of intelligence.
That's a good analogy.
Definitely. Yeah.
You also have a lot of people in Ohio. In one of the most populated states.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure just that mix of having a lot of people, having a lot of open land, I wonder what's the formula for all these Bigfoot sightings, that goes on in Ohio. Understand you got a lot of people, you're going to have more sightings, because you need people to have sightings, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, we've got sighting, you know, the Buckeye Boyhood book is the first documented sighting. You know, I mean, the Cherokee Indians, you know, they call it the booger, okay, here in Ohio, and they have a dance called the booger dance, which is where the wild man or the wild woman of the woods would dance with the children, and if the children weren't paying attention to their parents, you know, the wild man or the wild woman of the woods would come and grab them at night, put them in a basket and take them away, you know, and eat them because they weren't good. Well, when the white man was coming further west, he would pick up these folklore stories, and that's where we get the story of the boogeyman, you know, because it came from the Cherokee, you know, story of the booger, the booger man.
Hmm.
You know.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the Shawnee that were here in Ohio before they moved them out west, you know, they called it the Big Blue Giant, you know, and they talk about it, you know, about having battles with these things over food, over,
right.
You know, land and stuff. And we have a Native American museum here called Fort Ancient that has a battle axe in that museum that the Shawnees used to fight the Big Blue Giants with, you know. So
does this person that had this pony carried off out of the corral or whatever, you know, he had bent metal and whatnot. I mean, are there? Can he take more pictures of what had happened during that time and share them? You know,
I don't have any pictures. Of it. He has them, and actually, he had it posted on Facebook for. To raise money for medical bills for the horses, and they were it was on there for like 3 hours, and the page was removed.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
oh,
wow. Yeah. So, and but you know, like, but he like I said, he won't. You know, the horses are gone. I mean, they're just.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gone now because they the two large ones had to, because of his injuries and stuff, had to be put down. But like he said, the pictures that he had, you know, are in the hands of the sheriff's department, and you know, the sheriff's department says they don't know where they are, you know,
yeah.
They were thrown away or something. So
interesting. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. It's a cover up because you know there's another Bigfoot group, you know, here in Ohio that was looking into it also, and they got the big runaround on it too, you know.
Yeah.
Hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of runaround on
lots
it.
Lots of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, what's the next upcoming conference you're going to be at? I know you're going to be at the Janoskwa Fest now, which is awesome. I just saw that posted.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
But,
I'm doing that one. I'm not doing a whole lot this year. I mean, last year, God, I did so many of them. I just, you know, I was away from my family a lot last year and stuff. So this year, you know, I'm kind of going to go back to doing a little bit more writing, you know, and stuff and work on some other projects. I'm working on some stuff right now for Discovery Channel, or not Discovery, but Destination America. We're doing a project with the – a few years ago I did a Freedom of Information Act with the FBI on Bigfoot reports that the FBI had. And there was some stuff on that was kind of shaky and things. And so they're working on a show dealing with secrecy with the government on Bigfoot and things with government agencies and stuff like that. So that's something that's going to be coming up. Well, a project that, you know, we're going to be working on here that we're going to be filming within the next month or so. And like I said, I did a couple episodes on Mysteries and Monsters for some others. I did Hellhound and the Melon Heads and stuff. And then,
they're
yeah. Yeah. So there's some other projects and stuff I've been, you know, working on. I mean, I've done other, you know, research stuff for other shows and, you know, things like that. So, but,
awesome.
But no, I, you know, I'll be at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference this year, and stuff. I'll be, I'm setting up a table up there at that one, but, I'm not speaking, you know.
When's that one?
That one's in May. Or April.
Okay.
Yeah, May.
April. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They have a website. It's April, I think. Like the last weekend of 26 or something like that. Yeah.
So Jody, yeah. how do you cuz I don't see you involved in a lot of the crap that goes online and whatnot with the just so many the soap opera. How do you avoid a lot of that? Because it's prevalent.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I don't post my research on Facebook.
I
don't know. I don't know why people do. I mean, I really, really don't understand why people post their research on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, you're asking for trouble. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, it's okay to post stuff. I mean, that's what it's there for. I mean, I, you know, I sit there and wonder what Facebook, I mean, what life would be like without Facebook.
As do many, yeah.
I mean, you know, but I mean, but, you know, but a lot of people, I mean, but people just don't, I mean, when you leave a comment, they get angry. And it's just like, you know, if you don't want to comment, don't post your stuff.
Right.
You know, and people have to start learning to use the word allege and possible. You know, everything's a Bigfoot. Everything's a Bigfoot. You know, and you know, and things. And it's just like, you know, you can't. You know, and you know, if I, you know, I, you know, I just, you know, I'm just one of these people. It's just I don't know. I mean, I don't like to judge people. You know, on a lot of their stuff. I mean, you know, I don't want to be negative because I don't want it done to me. But I mean, I'll sit there and I'll give my opinion, but I'll be firm but fair about it, you know. But I won't be an ass like a lot of people, you know. A lot of people do.
Yeah, you know? That's the thing about social media is that if you post something, you're going to be ridiculed or you're going to have followers, you know. But it's a battle, and really, what do you gain from all that? I mean. I love skeptics. You know, I do. I have plenty of friends that are skeptics that when I do share something, 9 times out of 10, it's not on Facebook or, you know,
I don't like skeptics, you know, because, I mean, you know, you know, the thing about a skeptic, you know, it doesn't matter what it, you know, how much physical evidence you got, they're not going to believe it, you know, and things. I mean, the thing of it is, I can prove Bigfoot exists. A skeptic can't.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the only difference. You know, I mean, there's more physical evidence out there proving the existence of Bigfoot. I mean, if you want to really get critical about it, there's more physical evidence out there proving the existence of Bigfoot, ghosts, you know, UFOs, than they are the physical evidence or even circumstantial evidence that people have against them that's sitting on death row. Okay? I mean, if you want to be really critical about it, I mean, seriously.
At the same time, I think it's good to have them because they help filter out a lot of the crap in the community.
Yeah.
They put people in check because there's much garbage and
junk
being thrown at us every day on there.
Well, these guys who's doing this $10 million Bigfoot show, I mean, they're arrogant about it. You know, and, you know, maybe they have the right to be arrogant about it, but, I mean, but some of them are, like, really good, you know, really good guys and stuff, but there's some that's just, you know, that's really, you know, arrogant, you know, and asinine about it, you know.
Well, I mean, what it comes down to is it's a TV show. I have friends on the show.
Yeah.
You know, some of them I know pretty well and some I don't know so well, but it's a TV show, and the producers are going to portray what they want to portray. You know, I've been on Finding Bigfoot before.
Yeah,
it's the same scenario. It's all about...
I don't even get me started about that show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I have friends on there, and respectable friends, you know, that
yeah.
actually they do actual research. But it's a TV show. It's meant
yeah.
to entertain. If it entertain people, nobody will watch.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's the problem with... this is why I told Destination America, and they didn't like it when I sat and I told them this. I said, you all think you know what people want to watch, and you don't know that. You don't know. I said, as a researcher, I know what people want to watch. I know what it is because I talk to people. I know what it is that they want. And, I mean, their whole ideal is, you know, having some silicone blonde out there and some guy with, you know, surfer dude with, you know, a six-pack, you know, out there, you know, and that's what they want because it could take away from, you know, the stuff that they put on there that may not be true or that may be, you know, non-factual, and people are just going to let that slide by because they're watching. I mean, you know, it's like a Jael. They want another Jael out there. You know,
yeah.
It's like Haunted Highway is a perfect example. They did it. They did it. And there was a lot of people talking about this on Facebook. They did when they went down to Florida to do at this haunted lighthouse, and they had the two girls, you know, in these really, you know, black bikinis that were five times smaller than their outfit. I mean, for what they should have been wearing, you know. And it was like, what was the whole purpose of them showing them get ready and they're these bikinis and them walking on the beach in their bikinis? And I mean, what was the whole purpose of it? I mean, it had nothing to do with the show. Okay. But they think that's what people want to watch. No, and it's just like, no, people, that's fine. But people, that's not what people want to watch. Okay. The reason why, like, the show Mountain Monsters is making it, okay, it's
yeah.
hokey, but people can relate to those people.
Yeah.
Okay, the show's hokey and the show's funny, but people can relate to them. Now, I'm sorry, Finding Bigfoot, they think they're experts.
Not Finding Bigfoot.
Yeah, it's not finding, they don't find anything. They think they're experts, they think what they say
boring.
Is gold, and everybody needs to follow them because they know what they're talking about, and they
Hey, listen,
you know,
it is a TV show. It's for ratings. Like I said,
I've
been involved with it. I've
seen
it firsthand. Yeah, I've seen it firsthand. And, have to give credence to the researchers there. I mean, they're getting paid to travel the world and do what they love, and they get to interview people and whatnot. But, I mean, it's a TV show.
Okay, well, explain to me when they were in Tibet, what was the whole purpose of watching Bobo throw up?
That's producers. I mean,
okay,
you know,
I mean, but did you really need to see that?
No, you
did.
Did
you actually really need to see puke come out of Bobo's mouth?
No.
I mean,
no.
That's what I'm
saying.
But
what does
you
that
don't...
do? That gives ratings. That gives ratings.
Exactly, because that's what that show does, because everybody knows Matt Moneymaker is going to make an ass out of himself. They know
right.
he's going to go into a temper tantrum and stuff, and that it gives ratings. But the thing of it is, it takes away the meaning of the show. And this is probably going to be the last season because they really can't.
Oh, I think so. They have one or two seasons.
I hope so.
You know,
I can't watch it anymore.
But the point of it, and like I sat there and I told Destination America, okay, you know, I said, you know, if you're going to do a show, you know, you need to, you know, leave the bull crap out. You know, you need people want
to
see.
Cool to do a legit show.
Yeah, they want.
Well,
the Sci-Fi Channel even sat and told me, you know, legitimacy doesn't sell. Well, legitimacy may not sell, okay, but you know, a silicone blonde, you know, eventually does not.
I guess when it comes down to
I guess
to Jody,
we're down to our last minute.
If it's on TV, it will not sell.
Yeah, true.
It won't. Yeah.
You know, I was just wondering, where's the best place to find your books, Jody, before we go here?
Amazon.com books. I'm creating a new website right now. All my other websites are down. I'm kind of like putting everything onto like one website. But right now, Amazon.com is where you can get the books from.
Okay, cool. I definitely want to check it out. Well, appreciate you joining us tonight, man, and we're going to have to
have
you back again.
Oh, absolutely.
No problem. No, anytime.
You got
anytime.
A wealth of knowledge.
All right,
thanks
it.
Everybody for joining us in the chat room, too, and for Dan for calling in. And we're going to take next week off for the Super Bowl, but
yes.
We'll be back after that.
All righty.
Hey, thank you, Jody.
All right, man.
All right, buddy. You're welcome.
Good night.
Monster X. All right,
you guys have a good one.
You too, bud.
All right. All right, you too. All right.
Bye.
Okay, bye.